This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Do you remember the first time you learned that police may think of you as a threat? If you've never been given the talk on how to conduct yourself when stopped by the police, chances are you're not African American. In the latest episode of our podcast, Us and Them, host Trey K learns all about the black talk. Here's an excerpt.
Parents are always trying to provide their kids with some guiding wisdom. Our last episode was about the talk, you know, the birds and the bees, you know, sex, etc. Today we're hearing about another kind of foundational conversation that, for some Americans, might be more important than learning about where babies come from. The suggestion came from a listener who, after hearing the episode about the sex talk, said we should really do an episode on the black talk. It's the talk we have with our teenagers about how you conduct yourself if you're ever stopped by the police. Needless to say, to me, a white guy who has never thought about having this kind of talk with his kids, I found it eye-opening, and I was intrigued. When did black families start having these talks? What does one say in this talk? How old are your kids when you have it? And how do you teach them to be safe while keeping their dignity? The reality is more complicated than just good guys versus bad guys. The fact is, if you are black, you are more likely to be stopped by the police. And as long as that is the reality in America, the black talk is necessary.
I have had that talk.
I gave my son the talk.
Do you want me to tell you about my talk?
The talk actually happens, I feel, in every family.
We always say it takes a village to raise a child because it really does.
Everybody that I know.
All the people of color.
My grandparents, my great-grandparents.
Cousins.
My uncles and them.
I remember my father telling me this and my older brother this in the living room.
And my mother was just very emphatic.
I might have been 12.
It's basically my grandmother, you know, being that you're a young black man.
All of my peers were on the receiving end in some way, shape, or form of some conversation about the police.
You know, I think it was just sort of a rite of passage.
All of us have had some version of that conversation with our children.
They very easily could have been teaching me how to tie my shoes. It's just a life skill that you have to know how to navigate.
The color of your skin could get you pulled over automatically.
You're getting out in the world, you're going to be by yourself.
Being in a place at the wrong time.
You're going to encounter the thing.
You have to know how to act.
If you're confronted with the police.
If you get
pulled over, you do exactly as you're told.
Be polite.
You don't talk back. Be respectful in your tone.
Yes, sir.
Answer the questions that you have to answer.
No, sir.
Put your hands up, do everything that the cop says.
You follow instructions.
Don't do any quick movements.
Don't reach for anything.
Have your license, registration, everything in your hand.
Never let a police officer hand you anything.
Maintain eye contact. Keep your hands where they can see you.
You might wind up with your fingerprints on an object that doesn't have any relationship to you.
It's basically taking the error rate out of the situation.
The nervous cop, the anxious cop.
Sometimes cops are scared.
Is even more dangerous than the racist cop. They're going to respond without thinking.
This guy's not having a good day.
And respond out of fear.
But the cop told me if he was just a little bit more scared.
And mistakes me reaching for.
And he shot.
My license and registration that they just told me to get.
I could have been planning a funeral just that quick.
And I could end up dead here.
They have the power to do what they wish with you.
You know, even if you feel like you're being
disrespected,
that's not a time to go back at them.
And if there's a battle to be fought, then you survive the moment.
And fight that battle another day.
It begins about the time that you are about to drive.
This is Greg Taylor. He's been an educator in the Washington, D.C. area for the past 25 years.
Sometimes a little earlier than that, because sometimes you may be with a older sibling who's driving, so you have to know how to act if you get pulled over.
He told me about the time that he got the talk.
So in my case, the talk happened with me, with my grandma, and then my uncles, and then, of course, older siblings, about how to act, what to do if you get pulled over by the police.
Your grandmother sat down and had this talk with you, but what do you remember about the conversation?
This was part of many conversations we had in the living room. I remember her being really serious, getting really solemn and saying, okay, you all are getting older, you're starting to catch the bus, you're starting to explore the city, you're starting to go out on your own. So what I want you to do is to understand this is what you have to look out for. This is how you take care of yourself when you're away from home. If you ever stop by the police, be polite. you know, no matter what they say to you, even if you feel like they're harassing you, that's not a time to go back at them. You know, just answer the questions. So it was just a sort of a primer, basically, of how to survive that encounter and get back home. You know, I think it was just sort of a rite of passage in a sense.
Taylor is a father of three, and he's carried on this rite of passage with his two sons and his daughter.
So my middle son wanted to drive, turned 16. So, you know, it was time for us to have this talk with both of them and my daughter as well. Same talk that my grandma had. You're getting out in the world. You're going to be by yourself. Here's how you need to act in order to make it home safely.
I really wanted to know what this talk might sound like. So I asked Taylor to pretend that I'm his middle son.
You're about to start driving now, and there's a possibility that you're going to be pulled over by the police. So tell me what you would do if you got pulled over by the police.
Well, I mean, yeah, they might pull me over, and I mean, I'm gonna be all right, Dad. I mean, I'm just going to take it as it happens.
So what does that mean? Tell me what that means.
Well, I don't know, Dad. I mean, I don't know. What do they do? They ask you for your driver's license and some papers, right? You know, I'm going to reach around in my glove box and get that stuff out and hand it to them.
So if you reach, you're giving them a reason to think you may be reaching for a weapon.
But I'm not a criminal.
It doesn't matter whether you're a criminal or not. What they're looking for is, are you reaching for something that could potentially hurt them? So here's what you do. When you get stopped by the police, first of all, you need to have your license and registration with you, proof of insurance, and that needs to be out somewhere in the car whenever you're driving so you don't have to reach for anything.
Where do I put it?
You can put it in the center console, or you can put it where you have your sunglasses. I keep it in the overhead console. And the next thing that you need to do, if it's nighttime, you roll down the windows, you turn on your dome lights.
But what if it's cold?
If it's cold, then you just have to be cold for a few minutes.
Yeah, I got
to
turn the dome light on? Why?
You're turning the dome light on so the police officer is not approaching the dark car. You also better keep your hands on the steering wheel. And before you do anything, make sure that you ask for permission to do so.
Dad, I have to tell you, I mean, I don't like this. I mean, it makes me feel like they're treating me like a criminal.
Well, like has nothing to do with it. If you want to get home safely every night, if you want to drive the car, period, this is something that you're going to have to do. When they stop you, they don't know that you're a good student. They don't know that you're a good kid.
And I am. I am a good student. I am a good kid.
And I understand that, but not everybody else in the world understands that. And these are just things that you're going to have to do in order to stay alive in those encounters.
I don't think that I'm going to be like Tamir Rice or Freddie Gray or anything like that. I mean, I'm not wearing a hoodie or anything like that.
No, but you wear hoodies sometimes. And Tamir Rice's family or Freddie Gray's family didn't think that they were going to end up the way they did either. Tamir Rice was playing with a toy gun in a park, 12 years old. Philando Castile. He was a registered gun owner. He told the police officer that he had his registration. I believe the officer told him to go ahead and reach for the registration. The next thing you know, the shot started. So, you know, you can be a registered gun owner in a state where, you know, that's legal. The guy in Ohio, I believe, was walking around the Walmart with a toy gun. Ohio is an open carry state. So even that shouldn't have been an issue. I've seen pictures on the internet where, you know, guys are walking in coffee shops with automatic weapons, with rifles. So that shouldn't have been by itself an issue. And if you saw the video, you know, he wasn't even really given a chance to put the toy gun down before he was shot. The police officer ran around the corner and just started shooting.
I mean, in a way, you're like kind of making me think like, I don't even know if I want to go out of the house. It sounds like everything's dangerous.
Well, everything isn't dangerous, but if you're ever in an encounter with a police officer, there are things that you're going to have to do in order to survive the encounter. And that's just the way of life. It's what I had to do. It's what your uncles had to do. It's what mom has to do when she goes out as well.
I mean, yeah, I agree with him 100%. I take those same precautions, and I think the majority of black people take those same precautions.
Dallas Staples lives in Charleston, West Virginia.
I've even thought in some circumstances, hey, let me get out of the car and put my hands on the hood. I'll tell you where my registration card is and where everything is, and you get it. I don't reach for anything. I have a federal firearms permit. I can carry a firearm in any state in the union. But I put my hands on the wheel, and I tell them, what do you want me to do? What do you want?
If Staples sounds like he knows the routine, it's because he's a former police officer. In fact, he was the chief of police in Charleston, West Virginia from 1991 to 1995.
And I let them know if I have a weapon in the car and who I am. I did that even when I was a police officer. If I ever got stopped, the first thing I'd tell that officer is, I'm a police officer, I have a weapon in the car.
Dallas Staples is now retired. He understands the reality of driving while black, but he also empathizes with the cops whose jobs have become more dangerous in recent years.
All of the gun laws, I mean, you take West Virginia, where you can carry a concealed weapon with no permit. So that gives the right to any adult to have a weapon. So every police officer now has to assume that everyone they come in contact with, whether it's in an African-American community or a white community, has a weapon. And there's really nothing they can do about it.
I guess it would follow that law enforcement people are feeling uneasy in the line of duty.
Well, yeah, I think uneasy. They spoke out against these type of laws because it puts them in danger. It puts citizens in danger. I mean, you're trained to be, you know, vigilant if law enforcement officers overreact or react to a person with a weapon, especially in West Virginia, it's legal for them to have it. So what do you do? I mean, people get offended if an officer draws a weapon, but as I've said, you know, police officers have a right to go home at night too when they finish their shift.
This elevated danger means when people have an encounter with the police, it tends to be tense. Back in the 90s, one of the measures that then Chief Staples began was a new model of community policing, specifically designed so that the community could get to know the police officers as people in their neighborhood.
We put precincts in 5 or 6 communities in Charleston, and they were in the neighborhoods, and they interacted with it, and the people could come in, they could do police reports, they got to know the officers. Those are the kind of things that we did to kind of minimize those biases, where officers really got to know people, and especially people of color, that it really worked.
But did you come into the job knowing there probably is bias?
Not probably. I came in knowing from before I became chief. I witnessed the things that some police officers did and said. So it wasn't that it was everything was just hunky-dory. No, there were challenges.
The number of guns on the street, combined with the inherent racial bias that Staples described, is compounded by the stereotypes everyone consumes.
A lot of times, because of television shows that have characterized young African-American males as thugs, and a lot of the rap music at the time was identifying all young African-American males as gangsters and that they had a gangster mentality. And those are the kind of things when kids turn their hats backwards, you know, that sent signals. And it sort of reminds you back as how young whites were profiled in the 60s for having long hair during the hippie movement and how police treated them. These are the kind of things that police officers have to be careful trying to connect those things to people and assuming that because a person has their hat on backwards or their pants sagged, that they're a gangster. Now, you might not agree with the way they dress, but that doesn't identify them as a criminal. Just because they're portrayed that way on some movie, you can't transfer that to your community.
Former Charleston Police Chief Dallas Staples.
That was an excerpt from our latest Us and Them podcast episode called The Black Talk. You can hear the entire episode online at wvpublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. This is West Virginia Morning, a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.